Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 44, episode 4 of The Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah.
For Thursday, August 16th, 2018, my name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. I'm Jack, y'all, and I'm Jack, y'all, and I'm Jackety Jack, and I'm Jack, y'all. That is courtesy of Joe Bocanegra on Twitter, and I am thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
I would swallow my pride, I would choke on the Zeit, but the Jack thereof would leave me empty, O'Brien. Swallow my nut, turn it inside out, Miles, nothing but great. Griffin, nothing, odd in a blow. Okay. That is from Chapman Rice, coming with the heavy heat.
Hell yeah.
On that one.
She back.
So yeah.
And in our third seat, we have the contributing editor and co-host of the Back Talk podcast, Bitch Media. I'm so excited to have back the brilliant writer, Amy Lamb.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, I have a singing.
Oh, yo, hit me with
yes,
it.
Yes. Do it,
If you.
Yes.
If I may.
Yes.
She dreams in color, she dreams in red. Can't find a Amy Lamb.
Nice.
There we
can't
go.
Can't find a Amy Lamb.
All right. There's a kid I went to college with named Zach Bitterman, and we used to sing, can't find Zach Bitterman. But I like Amy Lamb, too. That works very well. Well, Amy, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. But first, we're going to tell our listeners what they're in store for. We're going to talk about Aretha Franklin. We are going to talk about Crazy Rich Asians, which is opening today or opened last night. We're going to check in with Jason Kessler, see what he's up to following the sort of fizzling out of the Unite the Right 2 rally. We are going to check in with Alex Jones because people are still telling us that the Facebook ban hasn't slowed him down.
Mm-mm.
He's still just as important as he's always been. We are going to look at how post-Me Too comebacks might happen. Then we're going to check in with some heartwarming stories mm-hmm. that you usually hear on the news in America today that are actually a disguise for just late-stage capitalism horror shows. And we'll also just check in with the Catholic Church, which I think everything's good there, right? Everything's going well. But first, Amy, we like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
So recently I was hanging out with my partner and his family, and I guess they do like a family thing now recently where they work on crossword puzzles together because they're so hard.
Wow. Wait, well, group crossword
yeah,
puzzles?
Yeah, well, okay. like the ones in the paper.
The New York Times?
I can't do them. Yeah, the New York Times one. I just
they're
literally can't.
Yeah.
And so there was a clue, and then the clue was jeers, and then they were able to figure out the answer like because they got all the other ones around it. The word was hootset, and I was like, what the fuck is a hootset?
Hootset?
Yeah, and I googled hootset, and I was like, what is this? Because the clue was jeers, and then I like googled it, and I found nothing, like H-O-O-T-S-A-T, and then I was like, oh, it's hoots space at. Hoots at. But we really spent 20 minutes like, what's a hootset?
What's a hootset?
Well, I'm using it. I'm adopting that into my vocabulary anymore. Watch out for the hootsats, guys.
Hey, kids, put your coats on. Hootsats out.
What is something you think is overrated?
Pretty cool.
Loofahs?
That's pretty cool. Loofahs?
Yeah.
Just in general?
Say lupus?
Loofah.
Oh.
Lupus. Can't slow me down.
Can't slow me down.
The exfoliating kind, what are we talking?
Wait,
loofahs are overrated?
Yeah, they're overrated.
Okay.
I just don't get that. I mean, I think I have like an unconventional history with bathing.
That is a dope way to describe how I bathed in junior high.
Yeah. Right. Like a non-traditional bathing history. So mm-hmm. loofahs just kind of like gross me out. They're just like these physical manifestations of like asterisks that have like bacteria all in them.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I just don't fuck with them.
Yeah. That there's, I don't know. I mean,
well, you gotta
if
throw
they
them
told
shits
me,
out pretty quick.
If they told me that they were made of like some sort of antimicrobial, like,
right.
you know, synthetic thing, I would be cool with it. But yeah, they're just like scrunched up folds that could just be
it's a bacteria promoting wonderland.
Which so are sponges.
Wait, are we talking about like a shower puff or like a loof, like a proper loofah?
Oh no, like a shower. I'm thinking of like
the
99 cents shower puffs.
You gotta rotate them.
No, I was like at the drugstore the other day and it said like replace your loofah every 30 days and I'm like, this is a scam.
I'm like, well, I'm 40 months behind.
I know. That's why they're disgusting.
I
just
don't
fuck
so
with
gross.
Them. Yeah.
You can't just say I have an unconventional bathing history and just let that sit there. What is your unconventional bathing history?
Well, I think up until I was maybe in junior high, like in our family, we didn't use a shower until I started using the shower in junior high. So I was like, I'm gonna be a rebel. But before that, we would do like bucket baths. So we'd have like a 5 gallon like random bucket that we got from like I think Home Depot or some shit. Uh-huh. And so you'd fill it with warm water, and there'd be like a scoop, and the scoop was usually like one of those plastic containers that you use to hold coins from like Vegas. You know, like if you're playing
slots. One of those buckets.
Yeah, one of those buckets. Yeah, yeah.
So it's bigger than a cup, a little bit wider than a cup.
A big gulpy size. So then we have a washcloth in it. So you like squat with like the bucket in between your legs, and then you just kind of like pour the water on yourself.
Right.
And this is like, yeah, I mean,
it's
this,
very like Old West.
Yeah, I don't know what it was.
In Old West,
like Japanese style too. We don't shower necessarily. Yeah. Like we have a bucket and like ladling.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Strategy too.
And so it was like, I guess a water saving thing, but I think that's just how my parents grew up bathing. So we just did it. And then when I was like, I watched enough TV, I'm like, oh my God, there's literally a shower head in here. So why don't we use it? And then even when I was using like bathing that way then, I didn't use soap. And it wasn't until I was like in my mid-20s that I started using soap to bathe.
And what do you think of soap?
So you're just rinsing off your body?
Yeah,
basically?
I was just rinsing. And I didn't smell. I didn't have like BO or whatever. And it wasn't until I lived in China. Oh, I was God. Like, it must have been the diet I was eating, but I was like starting to have BO. I'm like, oh my God, guys, I need to use soap. Because like all of my people who I was living in China with were like, yo, like you don't use soap. Like what the fuck? Because I was also sweating profusely a lot because it was really humid. So then I started using, I'm like, wow, guys, I can use soap. So now I'm just like, I'm a soap shower. I don't even use washcloths. So I'm like pretty bare minimum with my bathing.
Gotta have a washcloth.
Yeah. I used to use a washcloth when I was a kid, but like, I just don't. So I'm not exfoliating enough. That's my issue.
Oh, man. Like my mom, we used to have this Japanese like fabric thing that was like an exfoliating rag.
Right.
Yo, you scrub the shit out of your skin so the shit was red.
Right.
And you know, all the dead skin would come off. And then also on my dad's side too, black people use the washcloth.
Yeah. Right.
So I was getting it all kinds of ways. But I'm the same way. I was raised in a bathtub, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
That it wasn't until I was in about junior high that I was like, yo, man, I can't be like this 14-year-old thing. My mom coming in, I'm like looking at my little sad pubic hairs coming out. I'm like, yo, this is not the wave anymore. Right. Like, I need to shower in shame by myself.
And as a white, I spent my youth just rubbing bars of soap on my
just
body.
Just taping Irish Spring to your body.
Right. Amy, what's something that's underrated?
The mute button, like on social media stuff, like on Twitter and Insta. I didn't know there was a mute on Instagram until recently.
Oh, there is?
Yes, okay. Right?
It was just incorporated.
Breaking. Okay.
There's breaking news.
There's a mute button.
Mute the haters on IG.
Yeah. And, you know, like I don't get that many trolls or whatever on Twitter, but I actually, because, you know, I've been on the show once, like a while ago, and I think I got some followers from then, and I think one of your listeners, like, got upset with me because I was talking some shit about white men. So then I was like, I'm going to mute him because I don't know where else he would have followed me
from. We never do anything wrong.
Wow.
I also, mute is just useful on Instagram for a number of reasons. There are some people who just post too much, I think. I'm not looking at you because you are one of those people.
I barely post.
Yeah,
shit
you rarely post. But there are some people who just are like,
I'm going to start.
Yeah.
It's good for interpersonal reasons.
Yes. Yeah. It's great for so many reasons.
And it's actually a great tool against a troll because they still think they're talking to you and they are in an echo chamber, a vacuum just, by themselves. And they're like, yeah, I showed them. You're like, bruh, you on mute. I don't know her.
It is wonderful on Twitter. You can even just like mute people when you get the sense that there's like something even a little passive aggressive, even if they're like being surface level nice. It's like, I could see this going in a negative direction. So you're going to be talking to yourself for the next 5 years. What is a myth, Amy, finally? What is a thing that people think is true that you know to be false?
I think there's like a proliferation of like cooking things and shows and stuff like that.
Cooking content.
Yes. Or like get your own subscription box to cook things, etc. But I think there's this myth around like how cooking is like healing and self-care, etc., etc. But I think cooking's the worst. It's the boringest shit.
Yeah.
Like I love eating. I will eat day and night, but I just think cooking is so boring. And I think it's a myth that's like trying to seduce us into this idea that like we need to like stand around and like peel shit for 3 hours.
That's how I feel about a job. You know what I mean? I fuck with the paycheck. When that comes in, the work, you can miss me with that shit.
Yeah. Every time I ask Miles to do anything, it says fuck you.
I'm like, bro, what day is it? Is it the second Friday? No, I'm good. Just use a voice machine to talk. But yeah, I think It all depends on how you're wired too, because some people like the focus.
Yeah.
But Her Majesty, my partner, it's not as like an exhilarating event.
No.
Loves the end product in between. Like, it's stressful for her sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think in the beginning when I started cooking, it was very frustrating because my knife skills were fucked up. It took me 10 years to just do the simplest shit. And then once you get the groove going,
are somebody who gets something out of cooking. And I agree. It's not treated as a subjective thing. It's treated as like, well, this is something
it's like
that
breathing.
Goes back. And yeah, breathing. It's like an important part of the human experience that we all must enjoy. And I'm a person like you. I don't like cooking. It takes me forever.
It's frustrating for you?
It's just like I get distracted. I get so bored by it that I just, it takes me a long time.
It's so
boring. I have
boring.
To like be like reading something or listening to something and then like, yeah.
Isn't that why people say like shit tastes better when you don't cook it? Right?
It all depends.
I've heard the opposite.
It all depends.
I don't care.
I agree. I agree with that sometimes because you may end up using the same flavor profiles a lot. So in that way, it can be like that. Just try fucking some different ingredients from time to time. And that's usually when I'm like, oh, shit, I made this?
Right. Well, no, so here's the thing for lazy cookers like myself and still eating good is that, like, I've hacked it because, well, I think you need to have one thing that's really good if you're not, somebody who's into cooking is that you need to be, like, a habitual eater. Because I will eat the same shit all the time and, like, love it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, I really fuck with, like, dry noodle packets, ramen packets, and then you add like different veggies or different proteins to it. And it's super easy. You just like take it out of the fridge, you chop it up and boil it. So that's my hack. It's like, and also you can get like bouillons for like pho broth or like ramen broth.
Yeah.
And so that's just way easy. And it literally takes less than 10 minutes.
Right. And then you lower your bar because you're like, this is easy and I love
that. Yes. And I literally only eat noodle soup when I'm alone. So
there you go. Right.
That's why, I mean, and the last time I was here, I talked about how I was dehydrated and I thought about it. I'm like, man, I eat so much noodle soup. I don't think I'm that dehydrated.
Right.
But yeah, all that salt in it though, too.
I know. It helps me retain my water.
Okay.
Why are you talking shit?
Or pickling your insides.
That's a thing I think people also disregard is how much water we get in our diet. They think you need to get like 9 glasses of pure water, and it's like, no, you get like most of that from your diet.
I get all
from your noodle soup.
From your, just cracking a 40 of Steel Reserve 211. Yeah.
I think things taste better if I make them and they're super easy. Like you're saying, like there's
like toast.
Yeah, toast.
Cereal.
No, like I used to just eat when I was, single and in my 20s, I would make like macaroni with just crushed tomatoes over it. And like I've tried it recently and it's not that good, but because it was like so easy and just out of necessity, I was like, man, this is really
fucking
good.
Bomb.
I just convinced myself. I ate that every night for like my for meals. Yeah,
I ate a lot of tuna helper in college.
Yeah, tuna helper is the shit. All right, guys, let's get into the stories of today. Unfortunately, the queen is dead. Long live the queen. Aretha Franklin passed.
Yeah.
One of the great artists of our lifetime.
I went into a K-hole this morning. I was supposed to be here a little bit earlier, but I woke up, I found out Aretha had passed away, and I was, earlier this week, they were like, she's in grave condition or whatever, but my goodness, Aretha Franklin's importance to music cannot be underlined enough. Like, she is truly one of the greats when it comes to music that was made in the 20th century. You know, she really brought the sacred sound to the secular world, the gospel sound, the soul sound, and made that accessible for many people. Before, it was very abstract or just, it was othered. It was like, okay, that's, especially from a marketing standpoint, they'd be like, that people of color listen to soul music, that kind of music. We can't really mainstream that. And, you can see in her career, she was on Columbia Records very early on and had marginal success, but she was singing like jazz standards and pop songs and things like that. And they weren't tapping into her background as a powerful gospel singer. And the second Jerry Wexler from Atlantic Records signed her, got her to Muscle Shoals, said, the first song I want you to do is a blues song, because she had not done that in her previous recordings. She sat down, hit one chord, and everyone in the room goes, okay, I don't know what that was right there, but this is going to be the song. And lo and behold, it was I Never Loved a Man the Way I Loved You. And that was her first huge hit. And I mean, read as much as you can about this woman, because from her work, just even doing good for civil rights and equality and things like that, to her music and just the evolution of hearing gospel music. I mean, there were people like Mahalia Jackson who were very talented, amazing gospel singers who didn't quite cross over because, the world wasn't ready, but Aretha blew it open for everybody else, and that soul sound, my goodness, hats off to you, or the hat, as Anna Hosnier says, refers to the hat she wore at Obama's inauguration.
Which is an amazing work of, like, almost surreal
it's
art.
It's nearly a fascinator.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Between fascinator and hat.
And just it's a bow the size of which should go on, like, the Christmas tree in New York City.
Yeah.
Like, it's, like,
or
that
a brand
big.
New Lexus yeah. in one of those commercials during the holidays.
Yeah, and just to producer Nick Stumpf, who's a musician, was pointing out just what an amazing piano player she is. There's a video we'll post in the footnotes where we link off to... where she's playing the piano on a live appearance and singing. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah. She showed the world what the soul sound can do. And yeah, thank you, Aretha Franklin.
You guys, Crazy Rich Asians, I think, opened last night and, you know, is opening over the course of this coming weekend. It's getting really solid reviews. I'm excited Constance Wu is the lead. I feel like her performance as the mom on Fresh Off the Boat is, I don't know, it reminds me of like what a lot of Asian Americans I know say they love and respect about their own moms. She's like unapologetic and strong, and I don't know. I read one person talk about the moment in the Crazy Rich Asians trailer where she laughs, and she like laughs hard and loud and like doesn't cover her mouth, and they were like, that act is not normal for an Asian character in a, you know, Western movie.
Yeah. So I'm seeing it tonight.
Yeah, that's dope.
We'll see
I
what happens.
I watched it last night.
How was it?
It was fine.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's what I'm thinking too. I think it's more about the representation than
yeah.
the film itself.
Yeah.
But
it was a fine rom-com.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, something about, like, where I am in my media consumption, but I'm just like, oh, this is nice that, like, now we're doing, like, a rom-com with a majority Asian cast or, like, entirely Asian cast.
Yeah.
But it's, like, it still felt, like, weird. I don't know how to explain it. Like, so I went with my brother, my younger brother. I have two younger brothers. So I went with one of them and went with my partner. And my youngest brother was like, man, I've never seen so like such white Asian people before in my life. Like, they're all Asian. But, like, because in the film, a lot of them had gone to, like, prep school in the UK, theoretically.
Right.
So they all have English accents besides, like, Constance Wu and her mom character.
Oh, interesting.
So they're all, like, these colonized Asians speaking, like, the Queen's English.
Right.
And, I mean, it was fun and all, but, like, because I had read so many, like, hype tweets beforehand.
Right.
Where Asians were, like, dying over it. They're like, I cried, like, 5 minutes in and I couldn't stop crying. And I was like... Really? I mean, like and I'm a crier.
Am I a bad Asian?
Yes, and I'm a super crier, and I just wasn't, like, feeling it on that level. And I don't know if it's because I went in with some other feelings, but I definitely understand, like, representation matters because, like, that's, like, a first step towards, you know, wider acceptance, et cetera,
right.
et cetera, whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to say, like, this movie needs to do a lot of work because it's just this one movie, and I think the problem is that, like, there hasn't been movies like this. But in a way, there have been movies like this, right? Like, the Namesake, which is about a South Indian family. Or South Asian family who were Indian. And then there was, like, Better Luck Tomorrow, which is about a bunch of, like, suburban, like, mostly male East Asian kids. But, like, there have been movies where there were, like, majority Asian casts. But there's something about this movie and how, like, it's, like, so capitalist-y.
Right.
And how it's being upheld in this very specific way that, like, kind of fucked that. I don't know. I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not vibing with it. And I feel bad.
Yeah, well, no, that's how I was, you know, because I feel like a lot of people... from Singapore were definitely vibing because they're like a lot of the cultural touch points were very relevant to people in Singapore. And I think I'm excited that we're looking at a film like this that's got an Asian cast and we're moving that direction. But yeah, I think it has to be a first step to then begin telling, I think, spreading the diversity of stories out a
right.
bit too from here. I think the first one shouldn't be too bad, but we'll see. I'm gonna go see it tonight. I didn't grow up crazy rich, so I hope... From that standpoint, it's not too abstract, but I think at the very least, it's nice to see familiar faces on screen because before that,
I was just like, man, of all the feelings that I'm feeling after watching this, I just feel so fucking poor. That was like my overwhelming feeling. I'm like, I feel so poor and I feel like I don't have a strong jawline, like my face isn't right because like the Asians in this film also look a very specific way.
Right.
Like the men, oh my God, like people are like... Women, especially viewers, are like, man, the female gaze in this film is, like, so extraordinary. But I'm like, so what? It's just, like, some pecs. Like,
Right.
It's just some six packs, you know?
Yeah,
right.
I get it, but it's also like, well, what is this? Why are we so into things that we criticize when it's, like, white folks? You know what I'm saying? But mm-hmm. then, like, when it's like just because it's like being embodied by Asian folks and we're like all for it. I mean, I want this movie to do well. I want it to like fuck up the box office. I heard that it's like it's gonna do great and yeah. I want it to do well, but I'm just kind of underwhelmed.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. by its nature, the whole accomplishment here is that it is a mainstream movie that is going to get wide release, and inherently mainstream movies have certain things that go along with them, like that every character is good looking and usually like wealthy and yeah, like Better Luck Tomorrow is a really good movie, but you know, I don't know too many people who saw it. But the director of that has gone on to have like a huge, amazing career.
So. Well, you're gonna love my film that's coming out called "Ugly Broke Biracial People." it's gonna resonate with people.
Awesome. We're gonna take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. And Jason Kessler is back in the news because his white supremacist march did not go as planned. They budgeted for 400 people. They had the security for 400 white supremacists. And I think 20-something showed up. So he's also back in the news because there's this great chat between him and a fellow Nazi where they start out talking about, you know, anti-Israeli stuff. It's just, you know, I think it's being streamed.
Boilerplate Nazi bullshit.
Boilerplate Nazi hangout. And then it gets interrupted here. I think we have some audio.
Big Orthodox crosses on their chest, as Dr. Duke likes to point out, is Jewish. The breaking houses are in Israel.
Hey, you get out of my room.
Hey, sorry, I'm having an issue here.
Oh, you got a drunk roommate there?
It's his dad.
Something like that.
Something like that. So then his dad just goes on to berate him. He has to like get out of the shot, like go away from the stream to argue with his dad, who's mad at him for Nazi-ing.
Yeah, this is a very familiar genre of video for me, which is someone being cool on a web stream and the parent comes in
right.
And just like, yo, what a... You doing the games in here again?
Right.
Like kind of thing where this one, it was like, are you doing that Nazi crap in here?
Yeah.
Get out of my room.
Dad, I'm doing Nazi stuff.
Yeah,
come on.
It's so fucking whack, dude. That, I mean, not to shame anybody who lives at home. There's no,
right.
my issue with this isn't that he lives at home. But this is a man who organized the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville last year. And he's on this fucking live stream bitching about whatever, Jews, I guess, in this case. Mm-hmm. And his dad comes in and clearly is, like, not happy about what his son has become. In some, whether he knows or not that his, you know, believes that his son is a cool Nazi or not, who knows? I mean, but he does go on to say, like, yeah, they watch a lot of History Channel, so, you know, they've been brainwashed into, like, you know, this Nazis right. are bad thing. Watch the whole clip because it's cringy to watch this guy like Jason Kessler try and act as if he just can't say, hey, my dad's tripping. Like he goes like, I have a Orthodox son. He's like trying to sort of talk to his dad, like frame him in a
he's
weird
like,
way. That
yeah. He wants it to seem like he's more dangerous and like more in it than he really is. So he's like, yeah, I actually have an Orthodox guy here getting mad at. And then he's finally like, yeah, it's my dad.
Wait,
he's
so he at lives at home?
Yeah. He lives at home.
And where does he live? What city?
I know he's from Charlottesville. Yeah,
Charlottesville. So was he organizing a new rally in Charlottesville?
He was trying to, oh, and okay. then it turned the into the okay. DC thing, uh-huh. and then that just fizzled out.
Oh.
But yeah. This is from June, apparently, this interaction from whenever they were streaming to each other. And, you know, he goes on afterwards. He's like, yeah, you know, he's like, well, you know, the reason I'm here. Like, he eventually has to explain why he's living at home. And, like, he's blaming it on the fact that people are suing him for the violence of last year's Unite the Right rally where Heather Heyer was killed.
Right.
So he's trying to act like, you know, they're trying to get, you know, the fucking legal bills. So that's why I'm here with... He calls them cucks. At one point,
well,
his own fucking
cucks.
Parents.
Yeah.
They're letting you live there, my man.
Wow.
And then Patrick Little's like, hey, I get it, man. Shlomo is probably going to find a way to evict me. That's why I'm on my boat right now in case it goes out. It's like, okay, wow.
Right.
So blame everybody except for yourselves because your racism has led you to a point where you are unhireable. And even like online, like e-commerce sites like PayPal or whatever won't let you do business on there because they're not trying to help you get any kind of money from anyone. So it's nice to see that there are financial repercussions for your, you know, being an out Nazi.
It just seems really unwise to like call your parents' names when they could easily just find that clip of them, of like you calling them a cuck. Like if I was his dad, I'm like, let me Google my stupid son living in my house.
Right.
Because he's such a fucking white supremacist that he's like causing violence and he caused somebody to die. Let me Google him. And oh my God, he called me a fucking cuck. Like I'd be like, the fuck in the hell? Like you're using my Wi-Fi to broadcast your stupid videos.
Right.
And you're going to call like, and then he probably has to look up what a cuck is, the dad.
Yeah.
Right. And then he's going to be like, it's going to be a bunch of porno.
Right.
He's like, who's having sex with my wife? The hell?
Yeah. And then he like brings Jason in to like talk to both him and his wife. Be like, tell him what you called me on your live stream.
So what's going on, Helen? No, wait, no. Forget it, dad. Doing that Nazi crap. But yeah, I mean, apparently, Patrick Little's been told. Richard Spencer, you know, he had to move back home to Montana because they just, being a Nazi isn't a job skill, and it actually makes you unhirable. So, you know, reconsider your values or your philosophical perspective.
This makes me sad because now I'm feeling bad for their parents, and I don't want to feel bad for their parents. They have to, like, take in their misfit white supremacist sons.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so, he's, what an entitled piece of shit that he is, too. Like, already, like, it makes sense you would have this mentality of, like, talking shit to your parents that are letting you back in and, like, also being a white supremacist who's blaming everything on everything else.
Right.
And just being like, oh, it's Muslims, it's blacks, it's Jews, it's, I could have got a job, but whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. He's got a lot to blame on other people because his life isn't going great right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, victimhood is their deal. Right. So.
Speaking of right-wing people who are being persecuted, Alex Jones is still banned from all the social media platforms.
That's the globalists!
And the right wing is trying to tell themselves that it hasn't hurt him, and in fact, it's helped him because people are going to his website to find him. And we talked about this briefly last week, but I actually, there's an article that's been, you know, near the top of Drudge for like the past week where they talk about how like he can't be stopped. And it's written by these, I see a lot of articles like this in, you know, journalism now where they don't really know how web traffic works. They talk about how his website gets 100 million page views in a month and that's a sign that he's like the biggest thing. That's like a third of what we were getting at Cracked when we were doing well. No, but like that's
screw you, racist.
It's like not that much. It's like page views is like really easy to exaggerate if you make people like click through to something.
Right.
Like that's, and I don't know. It just seems like they're like, see, look at him. He's a dominant cultural force. And it's like, no, like that's not that many page views.
Do I think you sounded like a media organization like CEO? Like that's just not enough. You need to pivot to video,
exactly.
Alex.
Yeah. Alex, that's what I've been telling him.
We need videos that scale for half the price.
So I should say I do advise Alex Jones on a few things.
Switch to video.
Yeah.
I mean, and you got to ask yourself: is this stuff scaling? As we say in the tent biz, the content biz. If it doesn't scale. Throw it in the garbage pail. So I can't believe that they're really still trying to act like, oh, don't worry, he's on top, baby. He's in the lab. But don't worry, this man isn't. I mean, just go to his website. All the nutraceuticals, it's like a fucking fire sale right now.
Right.
It's like 50 to 40% off all that, you know, fish or snake oil that he's selling.
Yeah. To sleeping giants. Basically putting him out of business.
Yeah. And he's, you know, good riddance to you guys.
Yeah. So we wanted to talk a little bit about the Me Too movement, Benghazi. Because, I don't know, it seems like we're at a point where things are sort of, the energy behind it as it relates to the mainstream is sort of waning. Like, some information came out about Les Moonves, where people keep, like, quoting the fact that he was forcibly kissing and touching people at work.
Right.
But the article, if you read the article, it's pretty clear that he like harmed people's careers in pretty significant ways because they wouldn't have sex with him in his office.
Right.
Like, it's really just the most,
it's
not
like
the most reprehensible.
Textbook abuse of power.
But yeah, it's exactly textbook abuse of power. And they didn't do shit. Like, CBS is just like, yeah, but he's, you know.
Well, they're
he's pretty important.
I think to their defense, he's like, well, the investigation is still ongoing. So we, and by that we mean we're just looking at our revenue stream.
Right.
And as long as that is increasing, we'll just have to hold our noses and go with this.
Right.
But yeah, that was an interesting moment because 6 months ago, that story for any other executive would have probably been clearly the company, if their values were in line with the rest of the world, they'd be like, yeah, no, we can't have this here.
Right.
But yeah, this was sort of like, I think the moment too, when we even talked on the show, we're like, are we having a moment here where it's waning, or is this one of those odd situations where CBS is merely doing it because Les Moonves, compared to Harvey Weinstein, the crimes may be less severe, but his importance to the business end of the company is too important?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, people, when Harvey Weinstein went down, people were saying, yeah, well, the other reason he went down is because Harvey Weinstein, like, isn't at the peak of his career anymore. Like, he hasn't made that many hits recently.
Right.
So Les Moonves is maybe a sign of what would have happened if he was at the peak of his career, because Les Moonves is still, you know, churning out those hits for CBS.
And I think if CBS admits that they are, like, he's done this fucked up shit, or that it is as fucked up as we feel it is, then they're like complicit, because there's no way like CBS didn't know. So it is a lot about like watching out for their money. Their
one, yeah,
100%. Because if they're like, whoa, what's this guy with this Moonves, dude? We didn't know he was like fucking up people's careers because they wouldn't have sex with him. Like, there's no way they didn't know. And oftentimes when we hear about these cases, it's like we always know that these perpetrators are like open secret things.
Right.
And it's just, I would not be able to believe that CBS didn't hear murmurings that like he was abusing his power.
Yeah. Well, right. And then even in that story, they also talk about how he was also shielding people at CBS News, too, who were engaged in some shitty behavior.
Yeah, Ronan Farrow does a really good job in the article talking about how when you have somebody like that at the top, it creates a culture of permissiveness throughout. And they talk about 60 Minutes, their like sort of linchpin CBS News program, and how there are multiple people there who have, you know, just been extremely problematic and to work with, and they've just been, you know, the people who accused them of being inappropriate are the ones who get moved out of the company, as opposed to the people who are doing the shitty stuff.
Right.
And then there's also the head of one of their sub networks. I think it was, I forget which network it was, but it was like True or something like that, was also really, really bad. And it was allowed to go on for a long time because that's just a thing. Like, people find shit out when you work at a company where the number one person is a fucking, you know, sexual
deviant predator.
Yeah, sexual predator.
And so if they get rid of, like, this Les dude, then they'll have to get rid of, like, all these other people.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's an interesting thing, too, because I'm sure if you work at CBS, Les Moonves is probably the person who gave, like, if you're high up, like, if you have a show, you've had to have interacted with them. And it's, I'm sure on some level people will be like, well, they can protest too by saying, like, I don't feel comfortable at this network. If this is true, then this is the person running the company. This is in line with my values. That now you have other people facing, like, other secondary existential crises of, like, this is the person that did it. What do we say? Those are the forces that allow these people to keep on doing what they do, because everything is so connected, and a lot of the time people's livelihoods depend on it. But yeah, looking at these lists of people who are still talking like they're going to come back is pretty interesting.
So Chris Hardwick did come back. He was rehired as the host of The Talking Dead because nobody else can talk about a dumb show about zombies battling people. So you need him. I mean, that's a one in a million skill. So they brought him back. Casey Affleck is currently out there promoting a new movie,
but he never fully faced any kind of reckoning. It just got hot for him.
Right.
It wasn't like, hold on a second, we're talking everything. It was just sort of like, I think I'm going to skip all the Oscars because of the Me Too shit kind of making it hot. Yeah. That's not like, you know, it wasn't like a full-on ouster.
Right. And he's admitted to contributing to an unprofessional environment.
Get the fuck out of here.
Which is a pretty gentle way of describing that a woman basically accused him of attempted rape. He like grabbed her and tried to scare her into sharing a hotel room with him. So it's pretty fucked up. The head of FX recently said, like, man, I really miss Louis, you guys.
Yeah.
You know? Uh-huh. And I don't know. People are pointing to Mel Gibson as a way. I mean, there's also like Charlie Rose has been rumored to be making a return with a show where he specifically interviews other men who have been Me Too'd, essentially. And
it's called Boo Hoo.
Is it to call it To Catch a Predator? The yeah. fuck?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Matt Lauer is apparently thinks he's going to be able to make a comeback.
Did he not even read the stories about him?
Right.
About his Dr. Evil lair where he had a trap door and shit?
Yeah. I feel like with Matt Lauer, people just, they already didn't like him. Like, people had a sense. Like, you could tell he was a fucking shitty, slimy dude. And then, like, once this happened, Matt Lauer would be the one I would be most skeptical has any chance of making a return. But
I told somebody about that trap door thing, mm-hmm. and they were like, dude, it's just for, like, convenience. You don't want to get up all the time to lock your door.
Why are you locking your door all the time?
You just have to push it. I was like, the fuck? Oh, no. I'm like, this is an evil button. They're like, no, it's a convenience thing, so you don't have to get up. Because she's like, I'm sure Matt Lauer's office is so big. You have to, like, cross a lot of, like,
again, what do you need to lock your door
were
for?
Were you talking to Les Mendez?
Man, when I was a kid, I didn't even have a lock on my door because my parents were like, fuck that. But if I ever had my door closed, it's because I was masturbating or weighing drugs.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's never like, hey, I'm
doing both, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. I was like, I'm playing Need for Speed Hot Pursuit. I gotta have the door locked. Yeah, I was like, nah, man, I'm up to some shit in there. When you have the door locked, unless you're at home and you're doing it for your own protection, you're up to some shit.
Right. So Vox actually wrote an article about how people are using Mel Gibson's return to the mainstream as sort of the roadmap for coming back. And it seems like that makes sense because when you think about it, Mel Gibson, he never addressed that in any satisfying way. The fact that he was like recorded, you know, saying anti-Semitic things and being like horribly abusive to his significant other, like on the phone, like just a scary motherfucker. And so they said, like, here is what people are probably going to do. First of all, they are going to refuse to discuss their past behavior in interviews, which is what Mel Gibson basically got away with. He just would always be like, that's behind us now. And then he also got his friends to defend him, which is something that we really should not, you know, stand for anymore. But like, I think Jodie Foster is like Mel Gibson's best friend and was always just like, yeah, Mel is really funny. You guys just need to get to know him. And then he waited for a while so that things did like a few smaller movies. And then he reintegrated himself first as a director, so we didn't have to, like, see him. He made that war movie, Hacksaw Ridge.
Right.
And then eventually, like, he got nominated for an Oscar, and people saw him at the Oscars, and, like, he laughed at a joke that was made about him, and that was apparently enough. I remember that preview. It was just the Daddy's Home 2 preview.
Right.
The trailer's structured where it's not just that, like, he's incidentally appearing in it. It's like we see John Lithgow is revealed as Will Ferrell's dad, and they're really silly. And then there's, like, dramatic tension about who Mark Wahlberg's dad is going to be. And it's revealed in this, like, badass, like, rock video slow motion to be, like, the coolest guy, Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's like, he's back, baby.
Yeah.
It was like, what the fuck?
I remember when that trailer came out. I think we even talked on the show. We're like, oh, you're back?
Right.
Somebody let you back in?
And they almost leaned into it a little bit in the trailer. So
I liked the first one, too.
Daddy's Home.
It was a sleeper kind of a good movie. I did not realize until, I always check Amazon Prime. I'm like, what do I get with my Prime?
That's on my list of movies that super producer Anna Hosnier has said are secretly better. And she's one for one because she told me The House with Will Ferrell and Amy Poehler. That movie is mostly stupid, but it has one moment that made me laugh harder than I've laughed at anything in like a year. So if people want to know what that is, ask me on Twitter.
But yeah, the other thing too is I think this tactic of Mel Gibson being able to not talk about his past, that depends on the press not asking him or pressing him enough to make him talk about it.
Right.
And the other fucking tricky thing is, especially in this town, publicists are the ones who are going to give you access to these people that are going to give you the access you need to be able to pitch a story or sell your access to make money as a journalist. And if you go in there talking hot and pressing the talent about, you know, their past acts and transgressions, it's a risky move for a journalist. And I think that's the other thing, too, that we have to kind of realize, like, we have to create space. Like, publicists also need to be like, hey, bruh, someone might ask you something like this, and I can't stop that. And right. maybe you should answer that. But I have a feeling, because money runs everything in this town, it'll be easy for people to go in and not talk about anything and not have anyone press them about, like, oh, what? This is a quick comeback for you. You know, like, right. that would be the first. If I saw Louis C.K. back on a show and I was, like, a journalist, first question off top is, so that was quick coming back.
right.
What do you think? What do you attribute this to? I mean, do you feel that you deserve to be back after all that you've done?
I'm not here to talk about my past, Miles.
Oh, the thing is, I'm here because I think it's very relevant to the system that we're operating in, because I don't know who the fuck said you should come back.
Speaking of systems, I think our new movie really attacks a system. No.
Okay. I mean, that's what's so disheartening about, like, even though Les Moonves isn't going to be, like, getting any consequences from his actions, it's like, even if he did face consequences from his actions, he can just come back very easily.
Right.
And, like, with his career intact and still make hella money.
Yeah.
On, you know, without facing anything like that's like a lifelong consequence. I think that, like, the fallout with, like, Benghazi and all these men, like, you know, being found out for being the big fucking creepers that they are, is that, like, not only it's not just important just to call them out, but to see, like, what their consequences truly are. Like, they're away from the limelight, but, like, they're away from the limelight sitting on their piles of money that they made, like,
right.
while they were harassing and, like abusing people. I mean, like, if I were to be found out to be, like, a serial predator, but I had made millions of dollars doing it, I'd be like, oh, this is a great time for a vacation.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I actually wanted
right.
this break.
Yeah.
Now I don't have to, like, make excuses for why I don't want to do this other movie, and then just write it out and then, you know, be like a Mel Gibson and come back and everybody forget about it. And I keep making my truckloads of money, because in the end, it is just about money and people's jobs.
Yeah.
Which is, like, so fucking disheartening. And it's, I guess it in a way, it's up to, like, consumers who consume this art to be like, I'm not going to fuck with your art because, like, I think you're a bad person. So you have nothing to come back to.
Yeah.
But I don't know if as consumers, we're at that point yet.
Principled
I mean,
enough,
some of us
yeah.
are, like, because I think that we talk to each other in this, like, weird echo chamber where we're like, we mirror each other's thoughts and feelings about this shit. So we're not going to fuck with, like, Louis C.K. anymore. But I think that, like, the wider WIDER audience will.
Yeah.
You know, he can't. I can totally see him making a comeback.
Oh, yeah.
And this would just be a blip in his career.
I think at the very least, the studios need to be like, for us to allow you to come back in or something, give us some kind of an apology that shows some ounce of self-awareness, self-reflection. That isn't, I'm sorry I contributed to an unprofessional workplace. Like, really, really show the world that you understand what you did, why you were operating in that way, and how you're trying to not perpetuate that kind of culture anymore. At the very least, because most of these people, I think that's why Dan Harmon was very easy to look past, because, like, wow, this person was very self-aware. Like, that was a fucking, like, really
right.
well thought out inward reflection
yeah,
in
you
that.
You didn't have to even look past it, because it seemed like he was working, like, he didn't try and skip over it.
Yeah,
like, he
you
could feel like he evolved.
Right.
Yeah,
and I think that's what you need. And because it's dangerous to have a world too where people can't make mistakes and then can never recover from that, because
right.
we have that with our fucking criminal justice system in a sense.
Yeah.
So I think in some way, depending on the severity of what your crimes are or transgressions, that. You have to show people that you're doing something different, not just, hey, I took time out.
Right.
And you saw that that quote unquote apology I wrote where I said I refer to my penis as a dick.
Right.
Like, all right, Louis. Like come on.
I mean, at the same time, it's one thing to ask me to stop watching Louis, but Two Broke Girls, I mean, come on, guys.
Is that him
CBS?
Too?
No, that's CBS.
Oh. But, when we want to stop watching Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. I mean, it really is, like, what are you about as a society? Like, vote with your behavior, you know? The CBS stock went down, but it didn't go down that far, and it's just still at a pretty high level. It went down, like, 4 points.
Yeah.
Like, that's, I don't know. The ratings need to go down before the people who actually make those sorts of decisions start worrying about shit.
Yeah, because I think the way people right now, like, seems like racism, xenophobia is kind of starting to resonate with people, that's a bad thing, because you can tell with people boycotting advertisers on Fox, that's been like a pretty focused attempt at correcting behavior through boycotting.
Right now.
Fighting racism is so in right now. I mean, it's like
it's
the hottest advocacy right now. But yeah, I think we have yet to reach that moment with the sexual predatory behavior, rape culture, et cetera. We're just hasn't quite reached that tipping point that a much broader group of consumers are saying, yes, we have to reject this and do something about
it.
And even racism shit is really not mean, look at Trump, bro. He's who knows? Who knows?
All right, we're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. And Miles, you noticed something about these heartwarming stories, these human interest pieces.
Many heartwarming stories, and I'm so glad because we live in such a dark world, as you know, that last segment shows us. But it's great to go around the internet and see stories being shared of coworkers really fighting for each other. And you know, if I was seeing more and more things of, you read stories about coworkers like pooling money together to pay for a colleague's medical treatment, or donating their vacation days to extend someone's parental leave, or maybe end of life care for a parent. And everyone's spinning these acts of altruism. They're just reaffirm, you know, our faith in humanity. And really, these are fucking heartbreaking stories where these people in our country are being fucking failed by our healthcare system. Our just general care system of care in this country is completely broken down. And I mean, I guess, of course, the generosity of someone else would be like, yes, let's put our money together to help this person in need. Let's put our vacation time together so this woman who's just given birth doesn't have to come back to work after 2 weeks because you only get paid 2 weeks off or whatever. The thing I just wish is I wish these stories were presented at an angle of like, we are fucking behind as a country and we're fucking up. Not, oh my God, isn't it so nice that regular people are footing the bill for like wealthy corporations or our fucked tax system? So for example, this was something like a couple weeks ago on Good Morning America. Obviously, you're not going there for like woke commentary or scathing, cutting analysis of our society. But like just the way this story was shared kind of rubbed me a little bit the wrong way.
Now to what new way employees are rallying around their expecting coworkers, helping them take maternity leave by donating their own vacation time. Love this. ABC's Rebecca Jarvis is here with more on that. Hey there, Rebecca.
Hey, Robin. Good morning. Yeah, that's right. One in four moms is going back to work just 2 weeks after giving birth. We're the only country in the developed world without a paid family leave policy. And now the employees of one company showing some extreme generosity.
Angela's boss and coworkers, instead of buying items for her off a registry, gifting their own relatively new coworker their own time off.
It was the right thing to do, and I had the time, and I wanted to give her what I could, and if it made life a little bit simpler for her, then why wouldn't I do that?
I mean, wow. Granted, in the story, they do point out what the deficiencies are in our system that have led to this behavior, but it's still like, isn't this great? Isn't this person so nice and kind? And yes, they are.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
But it's completely, you're betraying what the facts are. And the facts are that we are not prioritizing this kind of time off or care for our citizens, whether it's, you know, we're the only country where people are go into massive debt because they have medical bills. And as they said, it's only us and one other country that doesn't have like mandated paid time off for parents. You know the other country is? Papua New Guinea.
Right.
Everybody else has this. And I mean, look, our tax system is built in a way that we're not taxing people to the levels where we can create the revenues to subsidize programs that would be like, hey, yeah, we need to have like maybe universal daycare or something. So if you have a child, you can still work and have your child taken care of and be able to spend time with them. Like in Sweden, they get fucking 16 months of paid leave after birth.
That's not even that. Like, you posted a chart that shows the number of mandated days off that people have to get.
Right.
And, like, Estonia is at the top with 87 weeks of paid leave. Sweden's in the middle. It's below Germany.
Yeah.
New Zealand is even above. The only country in the developed world that has 0 weeks of mandated paid leave is the United States.
Yeah. And it's really frustrating to see because there are only benefits to having this thing, whether it's quality of life for the parents to be around their children when they're at their youngest. There's a lot of studies that show that parents who come back after like a full-on parental leave come back much more productive and much happier. And the idea that parents have to stress about, oh, you have a new member of your family and then you're going to just eat 2 months of, you know, your salary because you don't have paid time off is really, really disheartening. And yeah, I mean, like just in other countries too, there's a lot of places that have like subsidized daycare facilities that are open from 6:30 in the morning to 6:30 at night. So right. you don't have to worry, because we've already seen the cost of what childcare even costs for you to have a job and have to have a child being taken care of so you can work. And we've just, we're in a really, really terrible rat race in this country. And I just want to bring this up because that fucking tax system reboot, rework that happened in December was such a violent redistribution of wealth that is only contributing to this kind of system where working people are just going to have to work themselves to death and not be able to have any semblance of like a healthy, emotionally fulfilling life with their families or just on their own where they can feel that they're taken care of, or if they're vulnerable and sick, that you're not going to lose everything.
I don't know if it's so much that like we're not being taxed enough, but like how our taxes are being used.
Sure,
right?
Absolutely.
Like, because we get tons, like trillions of dollars are used in defense. And then, like, are using like Homeland Security or using
Space Force.
Yeah,
Space
right? Force. Space yeah. Force. It's a set, like, to do other things. So we don't prioritize, like our government doesn't prioritize our own care of our own beings. And it's like kind of like the ultimate gaslighting.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like they made us feel as if we don't deserve this time off so that, like, our coworkers, so that when they do, like, give us their vacation day so we can take a maternity leave, it feels like, wow, we did something good. That's why it's supposed to feel like a feel good things, because we've been taught that we don't deserve it.
Yeah.
It's like back to work after 2 weeks after you've given birth. Like, sometimes I take a good poop and I have to lay down.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I can't imagine, like giving birth and then, like, having a child ripped out of you and then having to be standing up or going – doing anything that doesn't involve laying down after 2 weeks. That's wild to me.
Yeah. There's a stigma with getting help, you know, in this country too.
Yeah. The things that America lacks and ignores, it's really stuff for, like you were talking about, like long-term health of our society. Like mm-hmm. just having parents who can spend time with their kids who aren't like completely stressed the fuck out. Like that's just like seemingly minor things that have reverberations like far down the road.
Are you, everyone has had a stressed parent, and even as a kid, you don't know what exactly is causing your parents stress, but you feel that as a child.
No.
And it can create chaos in a house.
Yeah, no,
and it's,
for sure.
And it's not even like them expressing to you. You just feel that shit. Like, oh shit, mom or dad is stressed the fuck out.
Yeah.
And now I feel bad because I don't know if it's about me or whatever. And I think, like you said, Amy, we're in that stage of this American empire basically collapsing where we're so focused on everything outside of the country that it's at the detriment to the people within its borders. So, again, we look at stock buybacks. We give tax cuts to these corporations. Oh, yeah, we'll give raises. No, we'll just buy back stock to increase the stock price and reward shareholders and things like that. Imagine that money going to subsidizing people's time off, you know, to have time with their parents. And the companies that do actually even subsidize that time off, they're usually in like professional sectors and not really accessible to the general population working workforce out there who would really need it. Not to mention that dumb fucking totalitarian dick measuring contest that he's going to do, Trump, that military parade. They just released like what the new budget is going to be. It's going to cost $92 million if this happens.
Lit.
If that happens, we're going to spend $92 million to run some tanks through DC and somehow and really show the rest of the world how, you know, how much America's in decline.
How big our missile dicks are.
Yeah.
You have to be so pathologically just unempathetic to not, like, these policies are being made by these people who at least know people, have been in the same household with people who've given childbirth. Like, it is so dramatically, like, traumatic. The, like, 2 weeks out, your body is still, like, you should be in a hospital bed. Like, you should not. It's the idea of going back to work, like, after 2 weeks is completely fucking insane. I can't imagine these people who are putting this policy into place. Like, right. are they just like, oh, all right, honey, well, I'll see you in like 3 months.
Yeah.
Like, after you're healed up. Like, I don't understand. Unless they just don't think women should be able to work. It's,
well, you know,
fucking,
it's a capitalist patriarchy.
Yeah.
Sorry. Cool.
I mean, it wasn't that long ago that, like, people literally thought that, like, women shouldn't walk upstairs. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, there's the risk of them falling downstairs and then, like, their womb would, like, fall out of them.
Right.
You know? Or, like, they shouldn't ride in trains because, like, going faster than, like, 50 miles per hour would, like, jiggle your womb out.
Yeah.
And then you would, like, and then your body would, like, combust. I mean, it literally wasn't that long ago. So I'm
that last one's not true. I was not familiar with it.
I mean, I've ridden in vehicles traveling faster than 50 miles per hour.
And your wound didn't come out?
No, I don't think. It may have dislodged a little, but.
All right. Amy, it's been a pleasure having you. Where can people find you, follow you?
I'm on Twitters.
You're on Twitters?
I'm on Twitters.
The microblogging site, twitter.com?
Yes, at Amy Adoyzie. That's AmyAdoyzie.
I love that Twitter
handle so much. I welcome all followers, even if you're going to troll me one day. I'll just mute you. It's all good.
It's all good. And is there a tweet that you have been enjoying?
Oh, so in the publishing lit world, people are sharing their favorite rejection stories.
It's lit.
So this writer, I don't know him, but his name is Mark Leidner. At Mark Leidner, L-E-I-D-N-E-R, M-A-R-K, sorry, M-A-R-K-L-E-I-D-N-E-R. He said that, I once rejected my own short story from a magazine I was guest editing. The magazine had a blind submission policy, and I didn't recognize the story as my own and forgot I'd submitted it months before I was asked to guest edit the issue. And he has this whole thread about how he read this piece, thought it was garbage. And I actually think this is unethical because he says that he like screen grabbed a portion of the submission and like tweeted it being like, look how terrible this writing is. And I was like, what the fuck? And then it turns out that the passage that he screen grabbed and tweeted was like something that he took from that short story and put in his new novel. And he had to go to his editors and say, you guys, like, I need to take this paragraph out of my novel because I fucked up. I didn't realize that I was making fun of my own writing.
Oh, wow.
And you guys have to take this paragraph out. And his editor was like, no, this is one of the best paragraphs in your novel.
Oh, no.
And then the best part about this thread is at the very end, he talks about how the advance that he got on that novel was so much that now he owes the IRS $175,000. I don't know if this thread is real because this seems like really ludicrous. Like, I've written terrible hot shit, but like, I don't know if I could forget what I wrote in it that I would like screen grab and shame myself and then owe like almost $200,000. I mean, also, that's a hell of an advance. So I don't know. I don't know this guy, but this is a very amusing thread that I'm super into right now.
That's crazy.
For the literati.
There's so many crazy stories about people just conveniently forgetting where they found some idea and, you know, stealing it. But a lot of the time it does seem like they just don't realize they're doing it. Anyways, Miles.
Oh, me. Yes.
Oh, you.
Miles. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. And I'm, you know, I love the Reductress tweets because this one really got me. This was, it's a fucking picture of a cobra and it just says, woman owns snake? Just like the idea, yo. For all the snake-owning ladies out there. But yes, you know, short and sweet. Shout out to Reductress.
I liked a tweet by Aquafina. She tweeted, buy my tickets to Crazy Rich Asians opening day tomorrow, where I will show up at a nondescript theater and recite all my lines at the screen while eating an entire Costco chicken.
Oh.
25 years, baby. Let's show them how much this matters.
Delicious. Yeah, Costco chicken, man. Impossibly
so
tender.
Good. You can find me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien. You can find us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. We also post those in the description of the episode. That's where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we write out on Miles. What's that going to be?
Okay, because it's, you know, Aretha. We got to play a song. I want to play I Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You, but the demo version. So this is, I like this version because it's the moment where they go, yo, okay, Aretha's got it. This is about to be a hit. This was, you know, really one of her first big hits on Atlantic. And from the second they did the demo, they got this whole thing fucking tracked and put down in 20 minutes. So shout out to you, Aretha. Rest in peace and enjoy this track, I Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You. The demo, though. The demo.
We're going to ride out on that. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you guys then.
Bye. Hey, it started to get good in there.
Yes, it did. They had that rocking thing.
No good heartbreaker. thought you'd run out of fools. Oh, but I was so wrong. You got a one that you'll never lose. The way you're treating me, you do me so bad. Baby, you don't know that I'm the best thing you ever, ever had. So kiss me once again. Someday real soon.